Hello, baseball fans, and welcome to the second episode of the Roster Rhetorical, the MLB Daily Dish podcast. Myself, Chris Schubert, and Mike Bates are back with you. Hello, Mike. How are you?
Hey, I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. And we don't have Matt Goldman tonight, but we have a special guest. We have our own Chris Cotillo with us. Chris, how are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. This is going to get a little confusing, though, because Mike is going to say Chris, and we're not going to know who he's referring to.
I'll just go by last names.
Yeah.
Last names? All right. I think that's what we'll decide. All right. Last names. So, all right, let's get right into what we want to talk about tonight, because we have a ton of stuff that we want to get to. And with Chris here, he has his information that he can share with us. We want to start with Jerry DePoto being hired as the Seattle Mariners general manager. And, Chris, I'll let you just kind of drive this conversation and take it away here, because we have a lot of topics we want to get into underneath the DePoto hiring. So, go ahead, get us started.
Yeah, I think it's a good move for the Mariners. He's a guy who knows that division, obviously, really well. He's only been out of it for a few months, kind of working as a consultant with the Red Sox. But DePoto's a guy who has a really stellar reputation around the game. Obviously, not Mike Socha wasn't his biggest fan, but he has fans kind of everywhere else. So he's the kind of guy who can mesh analytical stuff with the traditional scouting background. I know he was a traditional scout, the Red Sox back in the day. It seems to be a really good hire for the Mariners. It'll be really interesting to see from here on out what he's going to do with that club. I know we've written a few things on the site in the last couple of days of these radical trade ideas, with whether it be Felix or Cruz. I think there's been a few more articles written elsewhere today that they could trade Cano. I think that would be a blessing if someone could take on that contract. I don't really know that anybody would be willing, but there's a lot of moves that he's going to have to make. But seems like a guy who is really thought of highly across the game and pretty good hire for Seattle.
Mike, I'll bring you in here now, because Chris brought up a good point about the roster and what DePoto's going to have to do. And before the show, we were kind of playing armchair GM, looking at their roster and figuring out what they're going to do. What do you think is the first thing that he needs to address in his new role?
Well, that's a good question. I look at Jerry DePoto as kind of like a black box. We don't really have a sense of who he is as a GM in terms of his effectiveness. He had so many moves that were dictated to him from Marty Moreno, and I feel like there's a lot that we don't know about his ability to fill in a roster around the margins. He left the Angels kind of a veteran and brittle team that didn't have enough depth to fill holes. And so I'm really interested to see what he does with a Mariners team that really is going to need to make some important decisions about whether Mike Zunino is a complete bust, what position Brad Miller is going to play going forward, whether Ketel Marte, I'm not even sure I'm pronouncing that right, is for real as a shortstop long term. There are definitely some roster decisions he's going to have to make about with some of those one-dimensional sluggers that Jack Z brought in, guys like Mike Trumbo, or Mark Trumbo, excuse me, and whether those fit in long-term with his plans. Do we re-sign Iwakuma? Are there veterans signed long-term who he can unload to inject talent into a minor league system that is really bereft right now? Guys like Nelson Cruz. I threw out Felix Hernandez as an idea, not because I think it's likely. In fact, I think it's incredibly unlikely that the Mariners would deal him, but just as one of the very few Mariners who would have significant trade value, could inject talent into this organization at more than one spot.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head, because I think DePoto is really going to be tested for the first time as a general manager. When he, with the Angels, he had a lot of his roster already kind of in place when he was there. You know, he didn't draft Mike Trout. Mike Trout was already there when he got there. You had Pujols was not his call. That was a Moreno call. He didn't really have much say on that. And the two things we can evaluate him on.
And neither was Josh Hamilton.
Right.
Or C.J. Wilson.
Or C.J. Wilson, another one. There are two things we can evaluate him on. the deal of Howie Kendrick for Andrew Heaney, which I think...
Which was a very good deal.
Right, I think everybody thinks that that's going to be a good deal for the future of the Angels rotation. And the deal that sent Mark Trumbo to the Diamondbacks for Tyler Skaggs and Hector Santiago, is that right?
Yeah, that is.
Yep.
So that was those are the two moves that everyone kind of points to as, you know, hey, this is what he can do. But those are only two that we can evaluate him on. And I think he's at a crossroads here with this Mariner team is very quickly he's going to have to decide if this is a roster that just needs some tinkering and needs some pieces in certain spots, or if this is a complete, like, a need to reboot or reset and move guys like Nelson Cruz, potentially Felix Hernandez, although that's probably unlikely, or like Chris said, if somebody wants to take on the Robinson Cano contract. So I'll open it up to Chris now. What do you think he's going to lean towards? Does he think it's a reset, or does he think it's more of just a tinkering here and there to make this 25-man roster a little bit better?
I mean, I think it's really interesting to note that he didn't want to commit that much money to Cano when the Angels could have used, you know, a piece, and they were kind of rumored to be after Cano a couple years ago. So if he wasn't willing to do that, he's probably not a fan of the contract now and could be willing to move him. The Angels are one of those teams that before the Mariners really jumped in and signed him, there was kind of rumors about the Dodgers and the Angels and a couple other clubs, but DePoto wasn't willing to do it then, even though probably at that point would have been Moreno's call. I think there's kind of holes all over the place. Morrison has not been great. Trumbo has been pretty bad. Montero is pretty much a bust. I mean, catcher has been probably for a position on a team, I think Mariners catcher is probably the worst in all of baseball. Zunino has been terrible. Sucre, I think, has about three or four more hits than I do this season. There just seems to be a total lack there. I know that they were trying just all these, I mean, plug options throughout the year. Just all these kind of veterans, put them in AAA, and they opted out and all this kind of stuff. So they're going to have to look really hard at the free agent market at catcher. First base, they really need to address that long term. If Cano stays, obviously that's locked up. Seager's really, really good, really underrated player, and a Tar Heel, so I have to plug him. And then Ketel Marte seems to be a long-term option at shortstop. But if you look at, there are so many gaping holes on that roster. I think the first order of business will be to try to re-sign Iwakuma. That's what DePoto said today in one of his first interviews. But after that, you could see really a total revamping of the roster there. And they're going to be one of the fascinating teams to watch over the winter.
And I think it's easier to make this decision when you have a farm system that you can kind of pluck from if guys are close. But looking at their system, and we talked about this before the show, there's not a whole lot there for DePoto to pick from. You know, DJ right. Peterson is close, but I don't think he's there yet. Chris, who did you say before the show was your guy that you were watching?
Alex Jackson, an outfielder who was the sixth overall pick in 2014, is really the guy who scouts like. I think if you look at his stats this year, though, hitting .207 in 76 minor league games. So even there, he's their top prospect, and he's been pretty horrible after being drafted last season. But when you look at the rest of the roster, he is their, I believe, yeah, he's their only, according to MLB.com, their only prospect ranked within the top 100, which puts him at one of the worst farm systems in baseball. There's a few other guys who I've seen and heard people talk about. Gareth Morgan's kind of a young outfielder who is there, who's a pick in 2014, who is known to have kind of a high reward guy. There's some other guys that they got in trades. Nick Wells, a lefty they got from the Blue Jays for Mark Lowe over the summer. Some other guys down farther on the list, but really one of the weaker systems in all of baseball. So I think that's why a trade of a guy like Cruz or Cano, and even a controllable guy, whether it be Brad Miller or Taylor or one of those guys, could be effective as well. I just think it's just an organization that's really the major league roster is not successful. The farm system's not successful. It's kind of trending in a way where the Phillies were before they started moving some of those pieces. And I think DePoto has a huge, huge task and is really coming into a pretty bad situation.
You know, that's a really interesting point about Brad Miller. I mean, he is really controllable for a number of seasons. He has demonstrated that he's able to provide league average offense at up the middle positions, and they really don't have a space for him unless they're going to put him in center field, where I don't think that you know, he's a plus defender, at least at this point. Of course, they don't have room for him at second, and if Marte is going to stay at shortstop, he absolutely could be trade bait, and maybe somebody who could bring back a similar type player at a different position to help plug a hole.
Right, and he's under control through 2019. And you see teams absolutely love versatility. I think they value it. I think they overvalue it personally, but I think if the Red Sox look to trade Brock Holt this winter, another name kind of in the same mold, they'd get a ton back for him. The Zobrist has been traded a couple times in the last year, and he's gotten a pretty good haul both times. Those guys with versatility, it's just added value because it reduces the number of bench players, lets you add another pitcher to your roster, as well as, you know, just a good offensive player. I think Miller, so far this year, betting .254, 10 home runs, so some power there and not a hitter's ballpark while playing, let's see, six different positions throughout the year. So a guy that definitely has a lot of value, and I think a lot of teams would be interested in.
And hits from the left-hand side.
Yeah, that's key. Left-handed hitting is very popular throughout the game. But I want to get to another name that I just kind of saw and it popped into my brain, because we kind of agreed that while the idea of trading Felix Hernandez is something that they should consider, they probably won't. And like Chris said earlier, they're going to try to re-sign Iwakuma. But Tawan Walker is an interesting name. He's the kind of guy that's under control for a couple more years, and he's a young arm, and a lot of teams like young arms. Could they try to maybe pluck him out of their rotation and try to get some value to fill a hole elsewhere?
I don't think so. I mean, he's only 22 years old right now, and for as much as he struggled in 2015, he's still a young pitcher with a lot of upside who has plenty of strikeouts, has controlled the strike zone pretty well. His homers are something I'd be concerned about, but just in general, I think you're looking at a young player who still has a lot of room to grow.
Well, all right. I mean, I just think from a personnel standpoint, Jerry DePoto is going to have a really interesting time trying to figure out who he can put on this field that can help them be better than this year. I just think he's going to have to – he might have to pull a San Diego Padres, an A.J. Preller, and he might just have to blow this up and surprise us all.
Maybe with a little bit more of a balanced lineup, that would probably help.
Sure.
Not all righties.
Okay.
Not all.
Well, he does have Cano, so he can, and he's got Miller.
Yeah.
So there are a couple lefties there for you.
Right.
All right, so let's switch gears, because I want to go from one interesting team in the Mariners to another interesting team, albeit for some not as good reasons, the Washington Nationals. And a lot has been said about this Jonathan Papelbon, Bryce Harper incident on the field, but you haven't heard the hot takes from us three about that situation. So I'm going to open it up to the man who was named last week on this show the Emperor of Hot Takes.
That was not my idea.
Oh, it was my idea, and I'm going to stick with it. The Emperor of Hot Takes, Mike Bates, your thoughts on the Papelbon-Harper incident and its effect on baseball as a whole.
Well, I think, first of all, it's important to note that Jonathan Papelbon is an idiot. He's had problems controlling himself in the past, in Boston, in Philadelphia. He's super competitive. He is incredibly easy to provoke. There's absolutely no question that he and Bryce Harper don't like each other. And after Bryce Harper called him out in the media for his idiotic plunking of Manny Machado last week, all it took was a spark, and the powder keg was lit. I think just in terms of what this does, I mean, it highlighted what a tire fire the Nationals have become this year. It sparked all kinds of stories about just how dysfunctional their team and their front office has been, their field management, how Matt Williams has lost the team, and it's kind of shining a spotlight where a spotlight needed to be shined. He's gone now. He's gone for the rest of the year, and it'll be really interesting to see what they do with him going forward since he's under contract for next year as well.
That's the $11 million question, is what do they do with Jonathan Papelbon? And this is where we bring in Chris Cotillo, because he's the guy who's got all the information and the knowledge. $11 million is a lot of money for somebody to just straight up cut him. Do you see them keeping him around?
I really think, you know, I think they have to get rid of him. I mean, John Heyman wrote a couple of days ago, a trade of Papelbon is really necessary at this point. But they kind of shot themselves in the foot, because by acquiring Papelbon, they really, really pissed off Drew Storen. And Drew Storen basically wanted a trade at that point. They said, no, you're going to be our setup man. And now, I wrote an article a couple weeks ago, there's reports that a trade of Storen is pretty likely for this offseason as well. So you have, you know, two guys who are two really good back end of the bullpen options who both don't want to be there. I think it's weird if Rizzo goes back to Storen and says, oh, well, Papelbon's done all this stuff and we have to get rid of him to preserve the clubhouse. And, you know, we please come back and please love us again. Storen's not going to just put everything aside and be okay with that. So I think the best thing for everyone would be if they just traded both of those players and maybe looked elsewhere for rotation, I mean, for bullpen options. It's for Papelbon, for me, it's a really interesting case because I obviously grew up in Boston. I try not to, you know, wear that on my sleeve as much now because I don't really consider myself a Red Sox fan anymore, but I grew up a huge Sox fan. So when they won the World Series in 07 and he was a leader of that team, it was really one of the greatest moments of growing up for me. And I was at Coors Field last week just kind of marveling at, oh, this is a spot where Varitek jumped into Papelbon's arms. And, you know, watching him do the Irish jig and everything on the field at Fenway after they won the ALCS, really, I absolutely loved him. So, and then as I got older and as I've gotten into the game and really started talking to people, I didn't realize that his reputation is so bad. There were some clubhouse issues in Boston. Obviously, in Philly, there were some issues. And then I had the chance at the All-Star game to talk to him for the first time personally. And he went on a rant then in July about how badly he wanted to be traded out of Philadelphia. Basically kept saying the phrase, the Phillies need to you-know-what or get off the pot. You know, we all know what he was inferring there. He said that four times trying to get them to trade him. He baited them into it, and after about 3 years of rumors, they actually finally dealt him. And, of course, being the kind of person that we all now know he kind of is now, demanded that the Nationals sign him for next year to guarantee another $11 million. It struck me as a little weird because he's basically begging every media member who will listen a week earlier in Cincinnati to get out of Philadelphia, and then he refuses to be traded unless he gets $11 more million. So it just seems like this kind of a very greedy personality. Talking to him, I was really impressed with how engaging he was. All the reporters were saying, yeah, we love interviewing him. He's the best quote. He's great. He's such a good guy to talk to. He's really smart. He's engaging. And then that level of engaging with him becomes, in a lot of people's minds, misplaced passion in a lot of other ways. So when he's really passionate and speaking to you at a podium, it's okay. But when he's passionate and screaming at a teammate, it's not. Obviously, he took it way too far. You don't strangle the best player in baseball. And I don't condone that at all. But
and he was clearly picking that fight.
Right, he was. Yeah. But I also understand. It pisses me off when people don't run out fly balls, and I obviously.
But he wasn't. Listen. So this is a pet peeve of mine. He wasn't doing anything different than 75% of other major leaguers. He wasn't. I mean, it's the day after they're eliminated. He made it to first base long before the ball was caught. He wasn't giving 110% effort, but he's also he's not pouting as he's running down to first base.
I mean, the tension between him and Papelbon was already there. So I think Papelbon basically had the mindset of anything he does that even irritates me a little bit, I'm going to blow it up and try to create a huge problem. And that's where he's obviously wrong.
So. And Harper's done a lot worse things than that on the baseball field in terms of his young major league career. I mean, if that was the fight that Papelbon wanted to pick, that's an interesting one to pick because Harper's done some terrible things. I shouldn't say terrible, but some questionable things that were a lot worse than what he did or supposedly did there. But I want to get to a point, and I want to jump in here because I think there's an underlying thing here that nobody has really mentioned, and It's that everyone likes to blame Matt Williams for the collapse of the Washington Nationals. And yes, there is a ton of blame that needs to go on Matt Williams for his bullpen management and the way he lost them a lot of games.
And he lost the clubhouse.
But I want to make one point that he wouldn't have been put in that situation if it was not for Mike Rizzo trading for Jonathan Papelbon.
Well, I think that's largely true. I don't think Rizzo caused the various communication problems that Matt Williams had with his team throughout the entire year, and I don't think not having Jonathan Papelbon would have solved this team's problems. But I think it's pretty clear that Papelbon was not a good fit, and that it caused, you know, just a domino effect of damage in terms of the relationship with Drew Storen and now with Bryce Harper, and with the rest of the way the team, or with the rest of the team views Williams and views Rizzo. I think Rizzo bears a lot of blame as well for how the Nationals have played and how underwhelming they've been.
To me, it just looks like a group of prima donnas who just think everything was going to be handed to them all year. You have guys, you know, Escobar has had some issues throughout the years. Ian Desmond's known as a high-character guy. Strasburg's kind of known as can have some issues sometimes. Obviously, Harper has the reputation he does. Papelbon does as well. So there's just kind of too many personalities in there for that really to gel. And it's crazy that GMs really don't look at the clubhouse as important as it really is. I mean, you look, another Red Sox reference, but 2013, the Red Sox did not have the most talented roster out there, but they had the best clubhouse. And the way they gelled around the city after the bombing was amazing, and the guys were such high-character guys and really made young players like Xander Bogaerts feel really welcome when they came up. And that team won a World Series. So obviously the clubhouse does matter. And I think for a team with as much talent as the Nationals have and have had throughout the last 3 years, for them not to have anything to show for it at this point is actually appalling. So I think Williams will be fired. I don't think that they can keep him after this year. There's been a really interesting series in the Washington Post the last couple days. Forget who wrote it, but there was just kind of all the tension, all the different things that happened, all these little anecdotes of how bad the clubhouse is there. Jason Worth having problems, obviously a guy who's been there for a while. The Papelbon problems outlined there and some other guys. And I just think that you can't continue with a manager in that situation. And I really think they need to look a little bit at Mike Rizzo. But at the same time, if Rizzo was going to be fired, I think he probably would have been already just because of the state of the front office market. You know, you have kind of two of the top prospects or three of the top prospects who are out there for younger guys. Mike Hazen is the new Red Sox GM, David Stearns with the Brewers, and then DePoto with the Mariners. Those are kind of the top three prospects on the market in terms of front office types. So if the Nationals wanted to jump in and get a new leader in terms of executives, they might have already lost out. So I think it might be a little too late to get one of the best candidates out there, but I really think they need to evaluate Rizzo after the year.
You mentioned you mentioned Williams getting fired. And I think that that's going to segue right into what I want to talk about now is what they're going to have to do this offseason. Williams getting fired is probably number one on the list. And there's a whole big chain of events that are probably going to happen. They have to make a decision about Papelbon or Storen. You know, we iterated here that we think both of them are probably going to be gone, and they're going to have to address the bullpen. They have a number of free agents. Ian Desmond is a free agent. Help me out here, guys. Jordan Zimmerman's a free agent. Who am I missing?
There's Matt Thornton is going to be gone.
Isn't Fister a free agent?
Fister is too.
But there were three big ones. Denard Span is the other one, right? That I'm missing. So those five guys, and there's a whole bunch probably more, but those five are key components of this team, and they're gone. You have Jason Worth that's getting older. You have Ryan Zimmerman, whose health issues are a big deal. You know, you have Bryce Harper, the best player in the game, so it helps that you have that to build around. But
and Scherzer, who's a top three, four pitcher in the game, too.
But the Nationals have some pieces that they're going to need to fill in, and it's going to be interesting with the tension that's already building in their clubhouse, how they convince guys to sign up and want to join this organization. So where do you see this offseason playing out for them?
For me, Desmond is as good as gone. He tweeted a farewell to the Nationals organization a week before the season ended, which is really unusual. That's I can't really think of something. I mean, Trey Turner's obviously the guy there long-term at shortstop, but Desmond not even keeping that option open is kind of surprising to me. I don't really understand. I don't think Span would come back just because they have Michael Taylor in center kind of as a long-term option. So I think Span's gone. Pfister appears to be gone. He's probably going to be a guy who signs potentially a one-year pillow contract with some incentives after a down year. Reports today, the Blue Jays are really interested in him. So that would probably be a good fit, despite that being kind of a hitter's ballpark in Toronto. There's some guys they want to probably build around. Danny Espinosa, Anthony Rendon, Wilson Ramos has been there a while now, as well as obviously Harper and Worth are going to be there. But there's going to be a lot of moving pieces. I think Zimmerman's the key to it. Early prediction would be that Jordan Zimmerman actually ends up with the Cubs. He's from Wisconsin, I believe, and wants to be closer to home. The Red Sox are a team that are definitely going to go after Zimmerman and probably a bunch of other starters. But there's a lot of moving pieces for the Nationals. They really could be in the same boat as Seattle, like we were just talking about, where they kind of go through a complete rebuild and have to get rid of the club, a bad clubhouse. I think a really comparable situation, I know it seems like I keep talking about the Red Sox, but it actually fits this time.
It's your third Red Sox reference.
It's unbelievable. But a few years ago when the Sox had a team severely underperformed, horrible clubhouse issues, they traded Gonzalez, Beckett, Crawford to L.A., got a bunch of salary relief, got some prospects. The prospects actually ended up being Alan Webster and Ruby De La Rosa, who turned into absolutely nothing. Now that turned into Wade Miley for the Red Sox. We don't know how that's going. But the Nationals really could find themselves in that kind of position where they get rid of, I don't know, maybe Jason Worth, and Strasburg's a guy that I really think they're going to try to trade. They did last offseason. They pursued some other pitchers, not just Scherzer, but some other big-time names on the market. So I really think Strasburg could be gone. They have some guys. Lucas Giolito is one of the best prospects in baseball, and he could be called up as soon as next year, too. So there's a ton of moving pieces with that team. I think definitely Desmond gone. I think it's safe to say either Papelbon or Storen, if not both, will be gone by the end of next year. By the beginning of next year. And also expand. I don't really see a fit for him anywhere.
I think this roster is a little bit better fit to withstand an offseason, better than the team we were talking about earlier, the Mariners. They have a bit more talent here that they can, you know, tinker with. But yeah, like you said, Chris, this is going to be interesting because they have the ability to move like a guy like Strasburg and not – I don't want to say it won't like cripple their rotation because Strasburg's obviously a big name pitcher, but they have the guys in the minor leagues that they can, you know, pick from and plug into that rotation, and they won't feel it as much as a team maybe like the Mariners. So Mike, I want to bring you in here as we're talking about what the Nationals are going to do in the offseason. And is there one specific glaring thing that you think has to be done besides the Papelbon and Matt Williams getting fired? Those two are out.
There goes the low-hanging fruit. I think Chris brings up an interesting point about guys like Wilson Ramos and Michael Taylor as long-term options and guys who will probably be sticking around. But the real truth of the matter is that neither of them have been very good. I think this is a team that – you know, regardless of what they do, they're going to have some holes, and I think Anthony Rendon is going to go back to third base, and so then you got to figure out what you're going to do with Yunel Escobar, and you've got Danny Espinosa still hanging around. He needs to go somewhere. Ryan Zimmerman is always hurt and is not an effective first baseman in terms of being able to hit, and I think that is a contract they're just not going to be able to move. So this is a team that, you know, I'm hesitant to say they should hit the reset button, given that they do have some really incredible talent in Scherzer and Strasburg, and I mean, a team with Bryce Harper is like a team with Mike Trout. You already have a 10-win player on your roster, and that pushes you very close to at least being able to compete for a wild card every year. But you know, they really do have some hard choices to make with these young arbitration eligible players and whether they are worth keeping around as they get more and more expensive and eat up more and more of a budget that's being dedicated to guys like Scherzer and Zimmerman, Ryan Zimmerman.
It is going to be quite a spectacle to see what Rizzo does with this roster.
Oh, and especially because Bryce Harper is on his way to free agency as well. I mean, he's still got a couple more years of team control, but keep in mind, he's been in the league now for 4 years.
That's going to be a big contract.
That's going to be probably the biggest contract ever. And I think on Harper, a really important part of this is he's the kind of guy who's going to have strong opinions and strong emotions. And it's going to be to the point where if he goes into Rizzo's office or Lerner's office or someone, I was going to say Williams, but that office is going to be cleared out soon. I would say that Harper would go in and say, I need Papelbon gone. You need to get rid of him. And they're going to just say, you know, okay, that's going to have to happen immediately. They're going to do whatever they can to appease their superstar. I think in terms of the two guys, Trout is the two superstars. I think Trout is more of a guy who would, A, not get into that kind of altercation because it's not his personality, and B, not demand things for personal reasons and kind of do more just for the team. But Harper is not the kind of guy that's going to be willing to make those concessions. I think he's going to really want Papelbon gone. They're going to publicly say that they've apologized and kissed and made up and everything, and they're not going to really. It's just not going to
go. Are they, though? I mean, because they sent Papelbon home for the year. I mean, there's every indication, I think, that he's just not going to be back.
No, it was just an early vacation. They were just giving him some time off.
Yeah, well, that's why I think I think the trade's going to happen. But yeah, then there's the issue of who's going to take him back. And this is going to be a reference number 4, but there's actually an article in the Boston.
I'm going to keep a counter on the show. That's 4 now.
Take a non-alcoholic shot because we're just sophomores here. Every time I mention the Red Sox, but we I'm gonna cue the grape juice. But there's an article today in the Boston Globe that the Red Sox could really pursue Papelbon this offseason. I think he told me and a bunch of other reporters at the All-Star game that he would be willing to go back to Boston. He'd be open to it. And with Koji having some issues and injury-wise and getting older, I think he'd actually be a really good fit for the Red Sox. So we'll see if that happens. Maybe the familiarity. Obviously, a lot has changed in that organization, but just the place and having guys like Ortiz, Pedroia, potentially Buchholz, guys that he came up through the system with, still being there might help him a little bit.
So I'm a little concerned now because you've made 4 references, and I'm about to dedicate the last segment entirely to you. So this is going to be interesting of how many more Red Sox mentions you can get in here. But Chris, with you being here, we want you to tell us what's going on in the baseball world, and me and Mike are going to give you quick, rapid-fire reactions about what's going on. So I'm putting you on the hot seat here on your first time on the show.
All right.
I hope you're prepared. Mike, are you ready?
Sure.
All right, so Chris, you throw us a headline. Mike, you get to go first. You'll say what your thoughts are. I'll say what my thoughts are, and then Chris can add his thoughts, and then go to the next one, all right? Has everyone got the rules of the game?
Yeah, sounds good.
All right, Chris, go ahead. What's your first one?
All right, so basically the biggest story that we'll see is the managerial carousel in the next few weeks, and I think the lead candidate for a lot of jobs is Dusty Baker. He's going to be really in the mix for a lot of jobs, whether it be in Miami, where he seems to be a lead candidate, San Diego, there's a little bit of talk there. And if some jobs open up in Seattle and the Dodgers, there was some talk about that today. So Dusty Baker being one of the leading candidates to be a manager in the major league starting next season.
I think that's hilarious. Dusty Baker is a highly respected person in this game. Good for him. He is also somebody who has clashed with management in the past. He's somebody who has abused pitchers in the past. And he's somebody who is a huge personality who's not going to want to listen to the dictates of a front office. If I'm running a front office and I'm a general manager who has a significant amount of control, I want no part of Dusty Baker, especially because, you know, I know what I'm getting. What I'm getting is,
taking everything Mike just said, I'm going to make the greatest prediction in the history of this show that I'm going to look like a fool for. But Dusty Baker is going to be the next manager of the Washington Nationals. How about that?
Wow.
That's a good one, right? Yeah. He is going to – they're going to find him – when they fire Matt Williams, they're going to be looking for somebody. And Dusty Baker is a player's manager. He does
– I mean
– he protects his players, and that I think is going to be key toward fixing a locker room that needs – and a clubhouse that needs some help. So Dusty Baker, the next manager of the Washington Nationals.
All right. I think two other – I know we're going rapid fire, but on the bright side, if Dusty is hired – I will be incredibly happy since we'll probably be losing Lloyd McClendon. We will have at least one African-American manager in the game. The lack of minority representation among management is still an issue in Major League Baseball.
You broke the rules, but they were for good reason, so I'll allow it.
I think just to add one more thing, I'm also going to break the rules, not even a Red Sox reference, but two candidates that we should look at if the Nationals want to add a new manager, Cal Ripken Jr. and Barry Larkin. They've been kind of linked to that organization before. If Brian Price stays in Cincinnati, which there's, for some reason, an increasing chance that he does, then Larkin might have to look elsewhere for a managerial spot, and Washington could be a place where he finds himself.
Chris, the rules of the game are you're supposed to give us another thing to talk about.
All right, here we go. Right. So Bartolo Colon is going to pitch next season. Not really a big surprise, but Chris, this is probably something that you have an opinion on.
Look, guys, there are rules for on purpose. Do we want to switch the rules and let me go first here?
Go for it.
Okay.
It's all right.
So Bartolo Colon, when he was signed 2 years ago with the Mets, I thought this was the worst decision in the Sandy Alderson regime as general manager. This was a 40-plus-year-old pitcher that was brought in to try to help a young Met rotation find itself and get accustomed to the Major League game. 2 years later, I am in love with Bartolo Colon. I'm in love every time he steps into the batter's box and swings a bat. I don't care about your DH rules. Get those out of here. Bartolo Colon hitting is good for the game. And I want to see Bartolo Colon not pitch in the American League, but pitch for a National League team where he can swing the bat and try to hit more doubles.
Agreed. The best part of 2015 has been all the gifts of Bartolo Colon swinging the bat, and he hasn't been bad.
I meant on the
mound. I mean, he hasn't been great on the mound, but he hasn't been bad, and might as well. I mean, he'll get a 1 year guaranteed deal and a chance to make a team.
All right, next headline.
Yeah, go ahead. Shoot, what you got?
All right, let's see what we've been writing about today. I really think one of the more interesting things we're going to have to look at as we get into the offseason, what the Orioles are going to do. So many free agents, Parra, Davis, Wieters. I think they're going to really try hard to re-sign a couple of those guys, but definitely not all of them. So if you're the Orioles, who are you prioritizing?
I'm prioritizing Davis, I think. I don't think there's another power source out there on the market that has his ability, he revitalized his career in Baltimore, and you know, he's certainly come back from his amphetamine suspension, so I'd very much target him if I were them.
I agree. I'm also going with Chris Davis, but I want to make a bigger point about the state of the Orioles managerial and front office regime, because the tensions are rising quickly. I think I wrote an article, was it this week? I think it was at the beginning of this week, about the tensions inside the Baltimore front office that are rising, and a lot of it stemmed from their inactivity last winter in not re-signing some of their key players. So I think re-signing at least one of Wieters or Chris Davis is going to be the key, and I think a guy that they probably could target, and this is just off the cuff, I have no backing to this whatsoever, is Justin Upton for the outfield. They need some more power. They had Nelson Cruz, and that worked out well, but that loss of power kind of hurt them. So I think Justin Upton's a guy they could go after, and if they get Chris Davis back, those would be two really good punches in the middle of their lineup to go with Machado and Adam Jones and all those guys.
I just don't know if they have the money to really commit to a guy like Upton on the free agent market. That's why looking on the trade market for an outfielder may be more likely. They have some pieces they can move. Gausman is a guy that a lot of teams want that they've showed kind of an unwillingness to part with in the last year or so. So if they're willing to part with him, they could probably get a top-line outfielder for him.
All right, Chris, give us one more to close the show.
Okay. Let's see.
What you got?
Let's do a bold prediction.
Bold prediction. Okay.
Not really that bold, but you can't name Matt Williams because that's easy. But okay. Who is the next manager to be fired?
Ooh.
Oh, goodness gracious. I may need some time to think. Mike, you got to go first because I don't know if I have an answer here.
Sure, Dan Jennings.
Oh, that's cheating. Okay,
that's also not fair.
That's cheating because we know he's getting fired. That's not fair at all.
Oh, I think that was entirely fair. All right, well, fine. It's not my fault. You guys didn't...
Yeah, we didn't specify.
Yeah, that was my bad.
Let me think.
Wow, this is a tough one. Brian Price is a name that comes to mind, but Chris said he might not get fired.
Brian Price is an obvious choice. He's hypersensitive. He's shown no real ability to turn the Reds into a winner and hasn't demonstrated any kind of strategic or clubhouse or public relations acumen. He'd be first on my list, but then apparently the Reds think differently.
Mm-hmm. For some reason.
I got one. This is, you wanted bold, here's bold. Buck Showalter gets fired.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
Depending on who wins that power struggle between him and Dan Duquette, that's a real possibility. I'm a big Buck Showalter fan, but he has not really lasted with the team longer than 5-6 years. He's now finishing up year 5 with the Orioles, and it wouldn't shock me if he moved on. But between those two, I'd probably lean in his direction more than Dan Duquette's.
And there's a lot of money tied up with him, too, for Showalter, so that may be the only reason, or one of the reasons why they keep him around. So that'll be interesting to see. But I think Matt Williams is not going to be the only manager that we see get canned this winter. I think there's going to be a lot of them, so it'll be interesting. All right, guys, I think that's going to do it. We've been talking for a while now. I think people are probably getting sick of us bantering back and forth. So we thank you for joining us for this second episode. Chris, Mike, it was a pleasure talking with both of you. And hopefully we'll be back next week with all four of us. I'll see if Matt is around and all four of us can get on here and talk baseball. And
maybe a Justin Bopp guest appearance, too.
Bopp guest appearance. I'll see what I can do. I don't know if he'll want to, but I'll see what I can do about that.
Worth a shot.
Worth a shot. All right, guys. It's been good talking to you. We will see you guys next week.